Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Code Chat. I'm your host, Jeremy Foster, and I am joined today by Mark Michaelis. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great.
Good. Mark has been on the show a couple times in the past. It must be that you are able to present yourself that I keep inviting you back to join
I don't know what the secret is. I'm not sure yet.
And you know code and you know how to talk.
You haven't wised up yet, I think. That's the problem.
Well, we were talking about what, you know, what kind of a cool code thing do we want to talk about on Code Chat? And Mark's special sauce is in-depth knowledge of C Sharp. You've written some books. You do a ton of work in the inside of C Sharp and .NET,
I do. I'm actually working on my next book right now, so hopefully I'll get that done soon.
Yeah. Is it going to be kind of the same title?
Yeah, just an update from C Sharp 6 to go to C Sharp 7. So we're working on that. So.
All right. That's a lot of work, isn't it?
It's more than you can imagine. Anybody says, I want to write a book, my job is to discourage them because it's just not worth it.
I wrote a book, and just to say that I had, and I did it the year that my first son was born. And it was a tough year.
I totally get it. Yeah. I raced my son. My wife said it was a race, and he came first. And I was actually writing the chapter while she was giving birth. So.
Well,
not
C-sharp,
a claim that I'm very popular with.
Yeah. Now, if you're going to pick a topic to go deep on, C Sharp, boy, that's got some depth, huh?
It's been around. You know, we're going on 17 years here, and the language has gone through some significant changes, significant improvements. I don't think it's really changed, but it's improved. And so there's a lot of breadth there. There's a lot of stuff to cover, a lot of stuff to learn, and you'll find that certain features you use every single day, and some features you only use occasionally. It just depends on which niche or what particular type of programming you're doing. It tries to be broad and useful for everybody. And so if you're doing a lot of threading, there's a ton of stuff in threading that's available for you to go ahead and use. If you're using a lot of stuff with scripting or dynamic kinds of approaches, you can do that too. It has a breadth to cover a wide range of scenarios.
Yeah, it's really capable. I always say that I think that C Sharp is easily the most semantic language in the world. It feels like it's been, all the naming conventions are good such that when you break in and you try to learn a new thing, like let's say you get into the threading library, the names of things actually make sense.
Sure,
you know, because they were engineered to make sense.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of what makes C-sharp significant is the fact that it comes along with a framework, right? It's not C-sharp on its own. Clearly there's language about it, but you have to get the framework as well. And that's true in any language.
Yeah.
If you're going to program in JavaScript, it's not that JavaScript, you know, language itself is any good. In fact, you know, we'd question how great it is. But at the end of the day, what it allows you to do with a framework that you can use for it is incredible.
Yeah.
And that the power of C-sharp is not just in the language, although I think it's significant, but it's also in the .NET framework that comes with it. And now that we've got .NET and open source, we can see that platform is just flying ahead.
Yeah.
Of where it sort of stagnated for a while back in 2010.
Yeah, you know, when you learn a new language, I think you spend a small amount of time learning the semantics and the syntax. You spend a great deal of time orienting yourself to a new object model and figuring out what objects exist.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be that the message box was there all along and you just didn't know, so you just didn't type it.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. Although I find that if you don't know the language itself, you miss out on the finesse of being able to program and make it readable and the features. I mean, you can go ahead and cross code, you know, task parallel library all you like without actually using things like async or you know, different language features that allow you to write it more clearly and more understandably. And in some cases, do stuff that you can't do with just the library.
Right.
So the language itself sort of dovetails, that they sort of marry each other in order to allow you to have a great programming experience and create cool stuff.
Well, so many times when a new feature comes out, like I'm thinking about when the Lambda functions came out, and I at first did not get it. I didn't know why I needed this thing called a Lambda. It just looked like a new symbol that was a little bit confusing. But then when I finally learned it, I realized, where was this feature all my life? I absolutely love this. And correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the features in C-sharp 7 are just like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think in C-sharp 7, we're not seeing sort of a radical thing. It's not like we suddenly came up with a link again in C-sharp 7 or something equivalent to that. But I look at specifically things like tuple, and I think you find that starts to permeate your code in many different places.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things that you can do in C-sharp 7 that you could never do before, not because it's a syntax improvement, but because it just wasn't possible. We had the ability to work with tuples, but it was a pretty verbose, it was just a .NET framework capability.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great example where the language dovetailed with the new data type, in this case value tuple, and we now have got those two together to enable a totally different type of expression in the way we program. And before we had, you know, tuple, system.tuple in C# 6, and it was barely used, barely touched, because it didn't have the language feature that came with it. Now with value tuple and the ability to have sort of tuples pass back and forth as first class types and as literals, it really changes the capabilities of what you can, not what you can do, but the way you can talk and use the value tuple that wasn't possible with system.tuple.
So can we step back a little bit, and we want to talk today about the features that are coming in C# 7.
Okay.
And
here, right? We're already at C# 7. So they've been available now for
Good point. So can you give us an overview of what it is that's coming? Is it a small bulleted list? Is it a big bulleted list? Are there categories of features that have been added?
Yeah, I mean, if I just list them overall, you know, the ability for, there's little stuff like, okay, now you've got a binary type. I mean, you can actually go 0B11001. You can actually write, I mean, just what you've always wanted, you know, it's right there. And then the ability, if you get really long binaries, you can actually separate them with underscores, so if it becomes clear. I mean, I guess I would argue it's fairly piddly kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
If you're writing binary numbers, it's actually probably simpler to write them as a binary number rather than writing as 1, 2, 8, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, those are fairly simple things. I think the big features, tuple, as we've talked about already, is a huge part of what's been added. And I think that does give you capabilities. It turns out that tuple actually replaces earlier features. We used to program with anonymous types in the context of link. And for a large part, in fact, I would say 99% of the time, you'll never use an anonymous type again. Once you got tuples, the anonymous type is essentially deprecated. I don't mean it's not supported or not used, but there's virtually no reason to ever use an anonymous type again. And that was a first-class feature of C# 3.0.
Let me jump in there without letting you get, I don't want to derail you, but with anonymous types, I can create a bit of a structure. Can I do the same thing with tuples? And does that require nested value tuples? Is that how that works?
Well, you could do that. I think more of anonymous types used in the context of link, where you're going to query over a large, you know,
right.
an oracle table where there's 100 fields or something like that, and you want to bring back just a few of those fields. You don't want to bring back the whole entire data table structure
and put
that in an object. So we used to use anonymous types to bring back just a couple fields and select those two things.
Yeah.
It was a great place where we used anonymous type. And it could have been more than just key and name. It could be name, first name, last name, age. It could be a bunch
sure.
of stuff.
Yeah.
But it allowed us to do this sort of separation of just give me the stuff that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And anonymous types were the feature to go do that. And the advantage being that you could filter out just the vertical part of the table that you wanted and instantiate a type on the fly without even having to go declare a class.
Right.
Now we just return that tuple. And what's different about tuples than we've seen in any other language is that we can now name the items within the tuple.
Mm.
And the ability to name is a huge part of what makes the C# 7 so powerful. We had system.tuple back in C# 6,
yeah.
but everything, all the properties on that tuple, all eight properties, all eight items, was item 1, item 2. And
yeah.
there was no way to give it meaning. So we used anonymous types because it was still, it gave you structure, it gave you meaning
and
to your code.
And weren't there definitions for tuples with 1, tuples with 2,
yeah.
tuples with 3,
yeah.
and so
yeah.
on?
Yeah. yeah. And now in C# 7, I can actually name the properties or the fields that are coming back. So I can actually have, you know, a person.firstname and person.lastname, even though I'm not instantiating or declaring a class.
But what if I want person.address.city? Can I have, that's the structure that I'm wondering about.
Yeah, you can still do that. I think once you start, so it's totally possible, mm-hmm. right? That's a totally supported way to do it. But I think once we start to get into a hierarchical structure, we're more likely to go ahead and say, look, let's make this a first class citizen. Let's actually declare a class.
Yeah.
I mean, the tuples for on-the-fly types that you're not going to reuse.
Yeah.
It's not that you can't. It's just that if you're going to give that much structure, it might be time to declare a class. And we shouldn't get away from good OO structure and first class types. You think of that specific example and say, well, let's go do it this time. I need an address type. And then in some other code somewhere else, you're going to really sort of really redeclare a tuple of that. And then they've got no comparison to them. They're not associated with it. It's questionable whether you should use use a full C sharp type for that scenario.
Okay, so we're enumerating features, getting an overview of the stuff that's in C sharp 7, the new stuff. You said tuples is a big one. What else?
The next one is pattern matching. So if you look at the two biggest features in C sharp 7, it's going to be tuples and pattern matching.
Oh, okay.
And I think we're only on the beginnings of what pattern matching is going to become in the language. But the key feature that we get with pattern matching is that we can check a pattern, check whether something is of a specific type, and declare the variable of that type at the same time. And if you think about how we used to do this before, we used to say, hey, is this integer or is this variable an int? And once we got confirmed that yes, it is an int, then we'd go cast the int, or cast the object into an int. And it was sort of two or three lines to do every time. And with pattern matching, what's changed is now we can go and say, is this of the specific type? And declare the variable with which we want to assign that type into at the same time. So we can both check the type, declare the variable, assign the variable, and there's a third feature similar to what we had with exceptions in C sharp 6. We can actually say, and is the property, or we can ask a sort of filter question about saying, hey, is the name on this, you know, Inigo Montoya, at the same time that we check in, is the type a person object? Mm-hmm. And so pattern matching allows us to do way more than just check, are you of the specific type? It allows us to also go ahead and assign that variable to, assign the result to a variable and also do some filtering. So we can now use if statements with pattern matching, and we can do switch statements with pattern matching. The caution is don't use this if you can use polymorphism. Polymorphism is a better solution.
Okay.
But assuming polymorphism is not possible, for example, you can't control the base class and there isn't a shared interface that you can use, then you want to use pattern matching. And I think these two by far are the biggest features in C Sharp 7. And both of them, I think, will change the way you program for the specific scenario. In the case of pattern matching, we've now got switch statements that are not limited to literal types. We can now do a switch statement on anything. It can be on a person object, it could be an object, it could be on anything. We're not limited to types that can be expressed as literals.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see these changes as the language sort of expands and becomes more mature. And those are the two big features.
And then C# is turned on in so many different scenarios, like mobile, you know, using Xamarin, then and Unity, you know,
yes,
for games
exactly.
like that. Then all of a sudden, all these features are going into all these different methods of programming.
Yeah, I mean that's key. As you start to look at something like Unity or Xamarin, we start to see the same language used all over the place. And you know, as we start to see it build, there's things like .NET Core, where the same APIs are combined with that, because the API itself, the framework itself, is now going cross-pad as well. And that allows me to reuse my knowledge over and over again, regardless of which platform I'm programming for. And that's a big deal. I can just sort of reuse the skills. And I'm not saying in any way, hey, don't go learn a new platform or go. That doesn't take away from the need to do that. But the ability to re-leverage those skills over and over again is a huge thing to your ability to sort of be cross-plat and start going to much more broader spectrum of not just doing Windows programming.
I know as a developer, I never want to get tracked in a project that's gonna teach me something that's completely proprietary, and I know I'm not gonna be able to take it out of that project and use it anywhere else.
Yeah.
I want to be working on, like, I want my everyday where I'm doing this hard work of figuring out how to navigate my object space and how to understand my syntax. I want all that work to be reusable.
Right.
I want to go forward with
completely.
It.
Completely. And I think, you know, the change to go to open source was the radical change to allow all developers to sort of feel like, heck, there's no harm in being doing this. I've got a great future, and anything that Microsoft decides to do is an open source thing that everyone's going to have to accept and agree with and support.
And if there's any way in which I want to customize it, I can just...
I think even with the C#, I mean, you can literally go download the C# compiler and make modifications and make a pull request. Yeah. Now, whether it's accepted, I think we're all glad that everything is not accepted.
Yeah.
But the community is making changes to C# that we're now seeing in the next version of the language. And so we are actually seeing people submit changes into, you know, Roslyn and the C# compiler that are now appearing as first-class citizen within the language. When we go talk about C# 7, there are features that were added by the community there because of the fact that it's open source. And a lot of that is sort of Microsoft doesn't have the wherewithal or the bandwidth to go do everything. And so for people to come and put these little things in there is a big a big advantage of choosing an open source platform. And I go and visit, you know, companies and I talk to customers, and they sort of have this impression that Java is open source, and it's not even close, right? I mean, it's the idea. I don't know how they developed this reputation, but to literally have the compiler and the framework be 100% open source is a huge advantage to me as a developer, and it allows people like Unity to adopt it and say, hey, let me go ahead and use that as my core platform that I'm going to go
and
use.
As a language that has already demonstrated leaps and bounds more innovation.
Yeah. I mean, Unity is on Mono still today, so they've still got some work to do to get forward, but clearly the motivation for them to say, no, forget it, I want to use Roslyn as my compiler, they are working hard to figure out how do we go ahead and get off of this legacy platform onto a platform that is open source that we can take advantage of all the features coming forward and not worry about licensing restrictions. They literally went through a licensing change, right? They were on Mono, you know, something like 3 or version 3 or something like that. Then there was a change in terms of licensing structure for future versions, and they got stuck. And now for them to sort of move forward into using, you know, .NET Core and the C# compiler that's provided by .NET Core is a huge advantage for them that will prevent them getting those kinds of issues in the future.
Okay, so I want to talk more about the kind of the macro view of C#, but we were talking about features. Are there any more features that you want to enumerate in 7?
Yeah, so there's still more. I mean, another one I'd mention is the ability for you to go ahead and declare functions within functions. So we've got nested functions now, which is really a JavaScript feature. I think it's added because JavaScript uses that all over the place. Java really uses functions as a way of declaring objects, if you like. Mm-hmm. And C# not trying to go to that extent, because you still have classes in C#. But the ability for you to declare functions within other functions or nested functions is actually providing a feature that you never had before. Because before, you would declare a function, it had to be a class-level scope. And it may have created a scenario where the function could be called directly where it was inappropriate. By nesting it inside another function, you're essentially saying it is only callable by that function, and only that function will always do it. It is an encapsulation feature, one that we never had before.
Yeah.
There's some other things. There's ability to return by ref, so we didn't have that before, and we can do return by ref, which is really a performance feature. It's a niche feature for specific scenarios where you're doing a lot with memory. So that would be another one that I would add in there in terms of what you can do.
Okay. Destructuring is one of my favorites. Yeah,
okay.
I brought it up before.
So, okay. So it's interesting. So the idea in the deconstructor, just to be clear of the term, not destructor. A deconstructor, essentially, we have this ability since C# 1.0 where we pass in a bunch of objects or data types into an object, and we can encapsulate into a class. And so that was easy. You call the constructor, and you get encapsulated into this class. But there was no way to deconstruct it back out again. So if you wanted to deconstruct it back out again, you could do things like, well, let me write a method with lots of out parameters and return each of the items within that parameter that method as out parameters. Or now with C# 7, we could return a tuple. And what happens with the deconstructor is that we can now declare a tuple or something like tuple syntax with, you know, 4 or 5 different variables or whatever you like. And we can assign the person object into those 4 or 5 variables as just one assignment. It's just an equal sign, and boom, I get this tuple out. And that's the deconstructor. It's basically opposite of a constructor, specifically called a deconstructor, that deconstructs the object into its constituent parts.
Hmm.
And the syntax is easy. It's very clear to see. Okay, I go ahead and make this assignment. We have one sort of weird or new thing that happened in C# 7 to support this. And that is that for the deconstructor, you have to call a method called deconstruct. And we sort of got this magical name that said it's called deconstruct. And if you call it deconstruct and you have these out parameters, you can go ahead and declare a deconstructor. And so it's one of the unique, we don't have this a lot in C# where we have magic names, if you like, for methods. I mean, there are others, but this is the first time we've sort of seen that happen. And a question I get often is, hey, if I'm doing that, is that going to break my code? What if I happen to already call a method deconstruct? And the reality is, no problem. I mean, if you called it that, it's not going to change the meaning. It just enables you to assign an object to a tuple using tuple syntax, which wasn't available before C# 7. And so, no, there's no breaking changes with C# 7 just because you can support it.
It's interesting because the same concept, the ability to essentially assign to a structure, an object, and have that object be on the left side of the assignment in JavaScript is called destructuring.
Yes. So I think this was, I saw debates about this as you look at the language being developed in the forums on GitHub about, hey, I want to go ahead and use this term or not use the term. And Microsoft decided that the reality of the term, it is a deconstructor. We had taken an object that we construct, and we're now breaking it down into its constituent parts. We're deconstructing it. And they wanted, it is interesting where they made an intentional choice not to follow a prior language name that had been given. And there was debate about it. Hey, you know, the trend has already been set. Let's reuse that. And the explicit decision was no. Let's use language the way it is the actual term. And we're deconstructing. We're not destructing. And let's use that correctly.
Yeah. So. And sometimes that's the very best choice you can make, is to have a single entity, whether that's an organization or a standards committee or whoever, but some single organization say, we're going to determine what the names are because we have visibility into the future of the roadmap.
Yeah, or saying, hey, you know, at some point, when is the correction ever going to get made? Are we going to live with this with a not ideal name, or we're just going to say, look, we're going to just do it, even though it's different from our predecessors?
If you don't do some of that, you end up with something like CSS, where the naming is just a little bit insane.
You know, I mean, in some ways, I look at JavaScript this way, and I go, you know, JavaScript is incredibly powerful as a platform, and there's nothing like it. I mean, nothing will ever compete with JavaScript. But man, I wish they'd made some earlier corrections. I mean, I just wish that, you know, V2 had been, you know, there's so many places where I would have loved to see somebody have the boldness and the courage to say, stop the madness, let me make some improvements. Not that JavaScript isn't amazing as a platform, it is, but from a language perspective, it just doesn't have the finesse and the design intention behind the language structure.
Yeah, and I love JavaScript, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah, no, and again, I get why people love it, but they love it because of the platform, not because of the language,
right?
And that's the key difference.
So let's talk about this. We've got all these different languages, and we've got people who dedicate their entire career to being good at using these languages. Do you feel like the languages are converging, or do we as developers and a community even want convergence, or do we want our languages to have their own unique particulars?
I definitely don't think we want them all to converge. You know, languages have specific niches. If you look at the comparison between F# and C#, I mean, C# had been around for, I'm guessing around 10 years before F# came out, plus or minus a couple there. And yet there was still the burden of saying, hey, we want F#, we want the qualities of immutability and the ability to support threading in certain ways and do financial stuff and focused. There was a community of people that said, I really want the value of what F# provides. You know, we do see a lot of overlap. If you look at TypeScript and C#, clearly, you know, we've got the founders of C# working on TypeScript and bringing a lot of the features that were in TypeScript. I mean, we've even got, it's not just generics, you know, but we've got the ability, I'm trying to think of a feature that's in TypeScript. You know, certainly Lambda expressions and things like that are emerging into TypeScript, which ultimately, of course, is JavaScript. And they are the same people that are designing the language and coming up with that, and we're seeing an incredible overlap. But at the end of the day, that the two right now have got completely different purposes, right? Mm-hmm. TypeScript is designed to give me better JavaScript and give me compiled JavaScript such that I'm no longer waiting for actual execution to verify my code. There is at least some kind of check-in that I didn't have a spelling error or a typo or something like that, which we get in C#, but C# is not the power that it is without the platform that it's running on top of. And so C# is as powerful it is because of the platform, but it doesn't have the ubiquity that JavaScript does. And so the language is really designed around, or not designed, it comes with the platform, and you can't ignore the fact that it comes with the platform. Will we see, and have we seen features be adopted from one language to another? Of course, certainly from Microsoft. When you look at F#, Visual Basic, you know, C#, there's no doubt about it. If you talk to the team now that's working on the language team, which is all one team, if you talk to them now, what they're really trying to do is sort of say, let me leave VB to be VB and not force a whole bunch of C# features in there. And so we'll start to see some features that will emerge in one language or the other and not necessarily go to all both, unless it makes sense for both.
Right.
And the same is true for C#. I think we went through sort of a period of 5-6 years where it was like, okay, well, if you're going to add it to C#, you're going to add it to the other language. And if it's already in the other language, you're going to add it. You know, we went through that happening. But I think we're starting to say, okay, the languages are mature at this point. Mm-hmm. And we want to respect what the nuance is of each language and make sure we keep that capability. You know, I can't predict that they'll all become one. You know, I wonder what the next language is going to be and why is it created. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing, you know, even C# start to become much less formal, right? The ability for you to move to C# script where we no longer have to declare a class, right? The things like that that are starting to happen that are mm-hmm. saying, let me give some informality to the way that C# is a bit, is always available. And so we're starting to see convergence, but a lot of that is because, you know, JavaScript have influence. You know, the nested function is a great example if you'd asked the C# team back in 2001, should we do nested functions? I would guess, without a doubt, absolutely not.
Yeah.
There is no way we're going to go do that. And yet we're starting to see the same team sort of relax and go, okay, it's not always about the formality and the rigidness. We need to give some flexibility.
Okay, so and then in this world mm-hmm. where we have all of these languages, they have unique features, but there's a lot of overlap, there's a lot of feature sharing. What is the unique character of C#? What is it that makes C#?
Well, clearly it's not different from F#, but clearly the open source nature of C# and the framework that comes with it, that's pretty unique to against any other language, except for, I would say, F#, because we are seeing F#. F#'s open source, and it is built on the same framework. But F# is specifically targeted a niche. If you look at the numbers of users and stuff like that, you know, F# is, I think, below 10,000, I think.
But what if you broaden it, and you're comparing C# to Java and JavaScript and Erlang?
Let's start to look at sort of things like PHP and things like that. I don't see those languages even coming close to... I don't think the language is actually a focus of those platforms. By the way, there is a PHP version of .NET, so you can actually compile PHP to .NET. WordPress is running on, can be run on .NET. But I think the informality of the scripting language, what really makes C# powerful is that it is strongly typed. So if you look at the languages that are popular today, PHP, JavaScript, and C#, I put towards the top, ignoring things like SQL. It's C# that remains to be the strongly typedness, and the feature of that is huge.
Yeah.
And the reality is, it gives you the ability to do true IntelliSense. It gives you the ability to check your code to at least some, mostly or large part, to some extent, let's say, with a compiler that you don't get when you're starting to program in JavaScript. I think the uniqueness is a combination of the fact that it is strongly typed from a language perspective. It comes with an amazing framework. It comes with an open source capability that you can submit back and make changes to. And at the end of the day, it is a mature language that can do pretty much anything, cover a broad spectrum of programming, whether mm-hmm. it's multi-threading, command line programming, or even if you go to things like WPF and XAML. C# has the ability to work over all those spaces, and that makes it extremely broad and for a lot of applications. And with open source now, it's cross-platform as well. It doesn't run in the browser. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but it is cross-platform. We can write Xamarin code that's going to work across a lot of platforms.
Yeah. So. Okay, well, Mark, thank you so much for the chat. Let's go ahead and wrap it up, unless there's anything else you want to share with
developers.
No, this
was great. Appreciate it. Thanks
so much.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
everybody, for joining us on Code Chat. We'll see you next time.